Thanks, Blessing Zulu. Good evening, Zimbabwe. It's 17 hours 20 UTC, 7:20 p.m. in Zimbabwe on Saturday, November 29th, 2014. You are listening to Studio 7 live from the Voice of America in Washington. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Kip Stube. Here are our top stories this evening. Zimbabwe has started conducting public meetings to review the country's education system. Some say it's too academic and outdated.
There is a motivation and a debate now in the country that the current curriculum that we are applying is not responding to the challenges of Zimbabwe today.
The media's role in covering the conflict within ZANU-PF has come into question of late, with some being accused of taking sides.
Watching the First Lady operating on behalf of her husband, the President, is a fascinating spectacle and one which the media cannot take its eyes off for a minute.
Yes, I appreciate that, but she is doing so just as the Zimbabwe bus is about to roll over the cliff.
And women express strong views on gender-based violence. Stay tuned. Zimbabwe has started conducting public meetings to review the country's education system. Some say it's too academic and outdated. According to some of the people who have been attending nationwide meetings convened by the two ministries of education, the majority of respondents say current studies at primary and secondary school level are so academic that they do not fully equip students for real-life situations. The country abandoned a two-tier education system soon after independence, which focused on both academic and skills development. We spoke to Sifiso Ndlovu, chief executive of the Zimbabwe Teachers Association, about the current curriculum review consultation process.
There is a motivation and a debate now in the country that the current curriculum that we are applying is not responding to the challenges of Zimbabwe today. It is also motivated by the fact that in 1999, we launched a curriculum review process, which culminated what is commonly known as the Lamasanga Report, or the Commission of Inquiry into Education and Training. It had very far-reaching recommendations, which if we had applied at that time, Zimbabwe would be miles ahead in terms of human resources and in terms of technological advancement and many other things, including economic development.
Now, do you think that can happen, taking into account that at the end of the day, the country does not have money to implement some of these recommendations?
This is the dilemma, because it is a question of the chicken and egg. The country does not have money to implement a sound education system, but the country needs a sound education system in order for it to develop. So we are therefore saying, let us continue to have that. And in the manner in which we can implement, we try to implement those changes that do not need a lot of capital injection.
That was ZIMTA Chief Executive Sifiso Ndlovu speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. Officials in the Ministry of Education say they hope to complete the consultation process soon.
Direct from Washington, the Voice of America, VOA.
The media's role in covering the conflict within ZANU-PF has come into question of late, with some being accused of taking sides. While the Herald has been accused of siding with the alleged faction of Justice Minister Emmerson Mnangagwa, the Daily News, too, has been the target of attacks from First Lady Grace Mugabe, who has labelled it as biased toward Vice President Joyce Mujuru, the alleged leader of the other faction. However, as the economic situation and standards of living for the majority deteriorates, some are asking whether the media is following the wrong story. In continuation of our panel on this issue, Studio 7's Ndimiyake Makelele speaks with journalism professor Stanford Mukasa and journalist and editor Aiden Witherell of the Zimbabwe Independent. Witherell says the ZANU-PF debacle is hard to ignore.
I'm sure you will agree, Professor Mukasa, that watching the First Lady operating on behalf of her husband, the President, is a fascinating spectacle and one which the media cannot take its eyes off for a minute.
Yes, I appreciate that, but she is doing so just as the Zimbabwe bus is about to roll over the cliff. You know, just as everything is ever about to collapse. She has never mentioned anything about improving the economy, about free and fair elections.
Going back to the point that Professor Mukasa raised, Mr. Witherall, where does the media come in terms of continuing to highlight the issues that are of significance, really, to the common person who maybe doesn't really care that ZANU-PF is fracturing or that MDC is fracturing?
Yes, well, I think mostly people do care because it is their bread and butter that's at stake. And they are also fascinated by the spectacle unfolding in front of them, and so are we.
That at the end of the day, it comes down to an internal conflict. Obviously, as you talk about the role of the media, how does it satisfy the issues of the belly for the majority of the people who at the end of the day have to be on the receiving end of whatever comes out of this conflict? Mr. Weatherall?
Well, the point remains, we have a duty to identify the issues of the day, and those issues do, of course, include issues of the economy and the way that the economy is being managed. And it is not being well managed, it is being grossly mismanaged, and that, of course, is making life even more difficult for ordinary folk who have to endure these engagements.
Professor Mukasa,
you know, what's happening today in ZANU was predictable. I mean, many people had talked about how at some point these people were going to be at each other's throats. And I like what Witherall said, that this is really a spectacle. Now, the internal conflicts within ZANU is internal to ZANU. That has nothing to do with the Zimbabweans. And the Zimbabweans shouldn't care. They can hammer each other. They can chase each other down the streets. They can lambast each other as much as possible. That's their own internal affair. The problem with Zimbabwe is ZANU. How to get rid of ZANU.
Yes.
How to get the country to move forward. That's how I see it myself.
Yep.
But of course, as media, I'm not sure how much you can articulate that. But going back to what you raised, the fact that it's a spectacle. Yes, some could argue it's a spectacle, but it has real consequences. We're seeing a fracturing of a party that has been such a stalwart of the Zimbabwean political system. Is there enough reportage being given to what this could potentially mean in terms of how Zimbabwe could change after 34 years under one government?
Well, KANU was a stalwart in Kenya for many years. When they collapsed, it was a non-event. You know, the ruling party in Kenya. The same thing with UNIP in Zambia. Those were big, elephants in the political arenas in both Zambia and ZANU. But when they collapsed, you know, it was just another day. The day KANU collapsed in Kenya, you could just give a yawn. It was a non-event.
Mr. Weatherall, do you agree that if ZANU-PF actually collapses, it would be a non-event in Zimbabwe?
The public are very interested in what is happening to ZANU-PF and to internal politics, and we know that from our newspaper sales.
In terms of why they follow it, is it because they're concerned that the country will spiral out of control, or is it just watching this spectacle without really understanding where it's going?
I think they do understand. I think they understand perfectly that there is a connection between misgovernment and declining economic standards, a very worrying connection as well.
Going forward, does the media in this particular instance shape the developments or articulate the positions, or is the media just at this point following?
I think it does both.
Professor Mukasa.
Yes, it depends on whether you are looking at the independent media or whether you are looking at the state-supported media. The state-supported media are bound end and foot to the Jonathan Moyo ideology, and it will take a long time for them to unshackle themselves. The independent media must be praised, really, for the way they have stood up against all kinds of hammering and bashing over the years. And they might well set the roadmap to creating a truly independent media.
Mr. Weatherall.
I agree completely with you. Media has performed a sterling role.
But then the independent media has also been accused of partisanship. So does the media itself right now find itself also in some kind of funny situation, the fact that the opposition too is conflicting?
Yes, they have emerged in recent months, and it's going to be interesting to see what role, if any, they play in the liberalization of Zimbabwean politics.
That was journalist Aiden Witherall of the weekly Zimbabwe Independent speaking from Harare. Also on the panel was Stanford Mukasa, an independent commentator and journalism professor at the University of Pennsylvania in Indiana. Both spoke with Studio 7's Nibiyake Makelierie. Namibians are conducting elections today using an electronic voting system, the first time an African government is using such equipment. The ruling SWAPO party is expected to extend its near quarter century in power in the elections, which started yesterday and end sometime today. Political analyst Nkululeko Sibanda of Huddersfield University speaks about electronic voting methods in such crucial elections.
We're grateful that Namibia is taking the steps that are necessary to institutionalize democracy, to institutionalize free and fair elections. And I think that this is a job well done for the political leadership and the people of Namibia, who invariably have contributed to the system being what it is, or to the fact that the leaders see it necessary to invest in processes that would democratize the country further as we go into the future.
We have seen that in some African countries and indeed the third world, you find that a leader is hesitant to leave office, or they would rather extend their term of office. But we are not seeing that in Namibia. What does that teach us as Africa?
It is very true that the commitment of the Namibian people and their politicians is showing us that certainly democracy is not a European or Western thing. It can be achieved in Namibia. Certainly, this level of democracy is better than some countries in Europe.
That was political analyst Nkululeko Sibanda of Huddersfield University in London, speaking with Studio 7's Chris Gandhi. The world commemorates World AIDS Day on Monday. Tomorrow we'll be airing an interview with Farai Mahaso, the director of Badanai HIV-AIDS Services, and Timothy Manyemba, director of a Masungo-based HIV organization.
We as grassroots organization, we work with several donors and stakeholders. So in as far as working with children, even their parents, it seems that we are now a step ahead in primary prevention of HIV infection.
Mr. Mahaso, would you say the same for your organization?
Yeah, for our organization, we are from the community. We try to create demand by giving people information, but we also try to enhance treatment if they are in hard-to-reach areas, where we try to form what we call community at-risk groups, where people can also go and get medication for each other, and then they can support each other and make sure that adherence is high. Then we also work on food security and livelihood, and also we work with young people when they need to get tested, promote male circumcision. We really emphasize on working between the Ministry of Health, the health services, and also in the community, and we try to follow government guidelines and strategic plans that are there so that we really contribute to the national and international fight against HIV.
Don't miss it. Tune in for more details tomorrow. Now it's time for the Women's Forum with Marvelous.
Welcome to the Women's Forum, a forum where we look at issues affecting women, hosted by Marvelous Mplanga Nyahuye in Washington. Today, we have the pleasure of speaking to Mrs. Neti Musanu, the director of Musasa Project, a women's rights organization that works with battered women. Welcome to the Women's Forum, Mai Musanu.
Thank you very much. For us as Musasa, every day is 16 days of activism against gender-based violence, because as an organization that deals with survivors of gender-based violence on a daily basis, every day we are confronted with women, we are confronted with girls who are suffering from physical abuse, who are suffering from domestic violence, who are suffering from sexual violence. So for us, 16 days, we just use 16 days to amplify our voice, and therefore, during these 16 days, as Musasa, we have decided to take our celebrations to communities, although, of course, sometimes we feel there is really nothing to celebrate given the huge numbers of cases of gender-based violence that are being reported in our country. So we will be in the communities where the services are not available, where a lot of organizations are not working, but where a lot of cases are coming from. So we will use that opportunity to collectively bring everyone together to raise their voice against gender-based violence during this 16 days.
Mrs. Musanu, tell us about your one-stop shop that you have launched at Musasa. How is it operating? And what are you seeing following that launch? Is there a high incidence of domestic violence being reported, or what are the trends that you're seeing on the ground right now?
Since we launched our one-stop center in January, we have seen a huge increase in the numbers of women that are coming to our center. For example, per month we are receiving cases averaging 1,000 per month, and sometimes it goes up to about 1.4, 1.5. The problem we are having right now in our country is because of the socio-economic problem. There is a lot of tension within the home, and therefore people are fighting over the meager resources that people have. A lot of men are not employed. People are surviving on vending, and that has created a lot of tensions within the home. But we've also seen an upsurge of rape and sexual violence against women and girls, and in particular against girls. And in our shelters across the country, the majority of those that are in our shelter are young girls that have been raped and are carrying pregnancies. And people are looking for quick riches, and some are told that if they sleep with a virgin, they will be exercised of their HIV, for example, or they'll get a lot of money. So we are also seeing a lot of cases of rape and sexual violence against women and girls. Again, we see a lot of the economic abuse. If you go to our courts right now, the majority of those that are approaching the civil court are women applying for maintenance, and that shows you that we have a huge problem, and it needs everyone's attention at this particular point in time.
What would you advise a woman that is listening right now and is facing some kind of abuse or violence? What steps should they take?
It's not your fault. You should not blame yourself. A lot of women do not seek for services because I ask for it. It is never your problem that someone abuses you. But what you also need to do, especially in cases of rape and sexual violence, is to quickly seek for health service, because some will contract HIV, some will become pregnant if they don't seek for health service. So we always urge women to seek for health service within 72 hours, especially in cases of sexual abuse. But again, also even in cases of physical abuse, women have an option to go to the police. It's your right to report a case. It's again your right to apply for a protection order, and you can do this individually. You can also get assistance from organizations like MUSASA to apply for a protection order. There are many options. There are some women in the communities who ask, but the court is very far away from me. What do I do? Where do I go? You again can use the Domestic Violence Act to seek justice through your traditional court system. You can also even get counseling. People always think that when we talk about reporting, we are talking about men going to jail or perpetrators going to jail. You have an option to seek for couple counseling. So there are many options as provided for in the Domestic Violence Act. And we urge women to use that law, but seek for services early.
And for those that are facing some kind of abuse right now or just want to learn more on how they can prevent abuse, where can they find MUSASA Project?
MUSASA, we are in Harare at 64 Selu Avenue. We are in Bulawayo at 495 Avenue. We are in Gweru. We are in Chiredzi. We have community-based shelters in the communities. I would urge people to get in touch with us through our toll-free number, which is 0808-00074.
Time is not on our side. Thank you for having been our guest on the Women's Forum, Mrs. Neti Musanu, the director of MUSASA Project.
Thank you very much.
The Women's Forum is hosted by Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye in Washington.
Thanks very much, Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye. We hope you are going to have a wonderful weekend. Music of Thomas Tafiranyika Mafumo, coming to you live from the Voice of America in Washington, D.C. Now to recap today's top stories. Zimbabwe has started conducting public meetings to review the country's education system. Some say it's too academic and outdated. And the media's role in covering the conflict within ZANU-PF has come into question of late, with some being accused of taking sides. That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Kip Stube in Washington, D.C., wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.